Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. I'm Ryan Shukin, and Todd Embley is not here today, but he will be back. Today we talk with Tobias Foots about all things fintech and Asia, where Asia's leading, where Asia could pick up, how far ahead Asia is, and China specifically, in mobile payments. The fintech world is really coming around these days, and Asia is a center of innovation. It's no longer copyright, it's no longer copycat, it's copyleft. People are going to China to find the innovation. Partly it's because that China hasn't had the regulations in the first place, and they're opening up their doors just as this new technology is coming in. The situation and the technology are coming together perfectly. And Tobias sheds a lot of light on how this is affecting the whole industry. We also talk about what are the other things in the fintech world that's happening in Asia, including maybe robo-trading, AI trading, and what could be the next baton? What's the next challenge facing startups? It's a really interesting talk with a great person, and I'm really excited that we had him on our show. So without any further ado, let's get into it. Hey everyone, we are here with Tobias Foots. I'm sorry if I butchered that. Foots,
yeah.
Yeah. And I'm just going to give, like always, a little bit of a bio about how Tobias got here and his background so we can understand that first. He studied Chinese and business relations in South Germany, and in 2009 first came to Beijing doing study for about half a year, and then over at Tongji University for half a year. It took him some time to go graduate, then he came back over and started a mobile payment startup called PayMei over in Germany. And that was one of his first ventures into fintech and producing and developing for that. He actually came to China in 2015 working as a consultant for MediaMan, which now he's mainly working at MM Labs, which is part of Media Lab. And he's one of the superstar mentors at China Accelerator, focusing on fintech and helping us out. He's a partner and co-founder of the China FinTech organization here. And he's part of the G20 German delegation for Young Entrepreneurs Summit. So thank you so much, Tobias, for being here. Really excited.
Thank you, Ron. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So talking about fintech in Asia, it's different than anywhere else in the world. And I'm not a fintech expert. I'd love to know more about it, but I feel like fintech is still very, it's new to me. I need to read more books. I need to talk to more people.
Yeah.
So could you explain more about how the fintech world is different, or their approaches are different in Asia than they are anywhere else?
Yes, definitely. Like as you said, I'm focusing more. I come from a mobile payment background, so I always compare mobile payments in Europe and versus the rest of the world. And you can definitely say China is ahead 3 to 5 years in payments. If you live here as well, so
yeah,
you know
yeah.
how great it is to use the WeChat payments Alipay.
It's awesome. One of the best feelings to pay for your electricity bill or your water bill or anything, a taxi cab, just everything, just using WePay on a mobile payment.
Yeah, it's so convenient and it's kind of sad. Yeah, you don't have these kind of solutions in Europe. Still not. And in the US also, like there's no solution comparable to Alipay or WeChat Pay.
Yeah.
And the other day, people in Singapore are celebrating now they have instant payments, which you have in China since 2010. So these are things you can just see China's way ahead in payments.
What was the catalyst for China being so much more more forward thinking, or were they just ready, the market was more acceptable for this kind of thing? What were the factors, do you think?
In general, Chinese are more open to new digital solutions, not so concerned about trying things out. You can see it sometimes it takes on a bad path, in P2P where you have some stories which are obviously not so favorable for the whole stability of the financial system here. But for payments, I would say that was just a very good fundament to grow upon. Yeah, and then you had Ant Financial, which is a part of Alibaba, which is not a traditional bank. So, very well financed and just willing to risk a lot and put or also invest a lot of money in payments, where you traditionally don't earn anything, but they definitely looked at it. It's a long shot, yeah, because now they control the client relationship, so they can upsell it. Yeah, you have Überbau, the money market fund, which in two years' time, as it became the third of like in between the fifth most. Like in terms of volume, the biggest funds in the world, like two years.
One of the biggest funds in 2 years. Now, this is insane to me because two parts of this. One is that all of these banks that are pushing or helping build this, they're completely unknown, unlicensed.
Yeah.
Or I guess unlicensed, not unlicensed, but they had the proper license, but they're not like what we would expect in the West, you know.
Yes.
You need FDIC or this and that, you know. They are just building. There's not that many rules.
Yeah, I think that's a foundation which kind of fosters innovation as well, yeah, in a good and a bad sense. Yeah, it can go south and then you have like you can potentially have systemic risks, which is obviously something you don't want. But I think the regulator still has a close eye on things and stepping in when it's necessary.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there's always oversight.
Yeah.
But they're willing to take new directions. And so this Yuebao, right?
Yeah.
So the brilliant thing about this is you can just from your WeChat wallet or your bank account, since they're connected, instantly invest.
Yes.
Invest in a fund.
Yeah.
And they just show you in a graph what they're willing to give you back.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. It's starting from one
it's insane.
Quai.
Yeah. Yeah. From starting from one quai. You can just invest one quai. You can be like, I'm an investor. You can jump into the market.
Yeah. And it was also like a solution to a problem. Yeah, you have like interest rates close to zero in traditional like banking environments. So, and these are the kind of things, okay, you can argue they are not regulated, but on the other hand, you can also set up and structure this kind of products and offers in Europe for sure without being a bank. You can have custodian banks or there are other licenses. Yeah, you have an e-money license or something like. So you are kind of regulated, but not as you have not the strong oversight of a bank, which you might also not want as a startup.
Yeah, because banks are limited. Banks need to be controlled in some ways, and so they can't just go ahead with this crazy startup money payment. Like these are all uninsured investments. You know, you're just putting your money into something. You're just pressing a button and it's going somewhere. But you can take the money out anytime you want.
Correct. Yeah.
It's this digital. So people always talk about how China is, you know, copycat culture, copycat company, everything. Mm. And I keep on saying, if anyone says that, they haven't been listening. They haven't been reading. They haven't been following up. So is this one of the examples where China's leading the world?
Definitely. I went to a really interesting exhibition. I'm not sure the beginning of the year. I think it was called Copyleft, from the copyright. So when is it was really good.
Copyleft.
So basically the topic or theme was, when is a copycat a copycat? Yeah, when you use different materials, different styles, even is it a copycat still? Yeah, I think we talked about it like in before, like with the Segway. Example.
Oh yeah, the Segway.
Right?
I love that example.
Yeah, which basically like they entered the Chinese market and the Chinese just took it apart, made it better, and in the end bought it.
Yeah, the copycat was better tenfold, made more money, had a better business model, and then bought the original.
So yeah, I would argue you have a lot of process innovation in China. Yeah, like in Germany they are still talking about like same day delivery or like even the next day, which is kind of not very likely. Yeah, which is like here in China you go to Yihaodian or whatever.
Oh, a few hours.
Yeah, a few hours at definitely the next day morning, right?
Yeah,
it's totally normal. So this is kind of, I would argue that's also very innovative, like how to streamline this process that efficiently.
Yeah, I think that's one of the tough ways to, these are the tough lessons that companies don't want to hear when they're coming to China or they're thinking about entering. What are some of the other kind of fintech ideas that are coming and or that are the next big thing in China right now, besides for mobile payments?
In China, I think you have a lot of potential around blockchain-based technologies, yeah, and in combination with artificial intelligence, even higher. But I'm not sure if I just don't know if they are still in stealth mode or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you don't really see too many real AI startups or blockchain smart contract-based solutions that make sense at the moment, because also the whole legal system, I think, is not ready for smart contracts yet. Basically,
yeah,
you don't really have this foundation.
Or is it not being ready a benefit? I mean, like you said, there's a void.
Yes,
and you know there's nothing there. So why can't smart contracts be filled in China, leading other places? There's nothing to compete.
True. That's also true on the, for smart contracts, you just need also lawyers and the whole framework to be more flexible and faster. Yeah. You have revisions of the legal framework every now and then, but it's quite a static process. It's not as fast as you could potentially do it. So meaning you would need the whole government body, it doesn't matter which country, to kind of say, oh yeah, that really makes sense, and that's gonna make our whole process so much more efficient, which is most likely true. But are these bodies ready
is everyone gonna jump in? And the idea that you can even hack the contract somehow, and then, you know, I now own that property or whatever is in there, you could hack it.
Yeah, even if you can, hacking or not hacking it, I think when you lose it, right? That's the big thing. Yeah, if you lose this contract, then basically, you have a problem, a huge one. Because it's kind of your own signature. So whoever steals this contract for you, it's a bit bad. Like that's what happened a couple of times the last couple of days, right? With bitcoins, where a huge amount of bitcoins got stolen. Yeah.
Oh yeah, a huge amount got hacked and stolen.
Yeah,
something millions.
Yes, 70 millions, I think, was around 70 millions from Bitfinex, I think, was the one.
Oh wow!
And then we had another one as well. Well, yeah,
it's like trains getting robbed in the old West.
Yeah, but you to know? Be fair, your
stagecoaches being held up.
To be fair, the SWIFT network, the traditional network for banks communicating, is also not that safe. Yeah, you have also two major incidents.
Oh yeah, go wrong. Yeah. Money. I mean, and no one's willing to help.
Yeah, exactly. And then you it's just on a different scale. Yeah, it's a central bank who basically loses some money, which is.
So, what do you think? the best advice that you give when someone comes to you. So let's say you're consulting now, put on your consulting hat, company, fintech, comes to you and they say, we want to be in China. You know, these are our assumptions. This is what we want to build. Where do you have to steer people right? When they come in, they say, I want to jump into China. Yeah. This is my plan. This is what I'm going to do. Where are you correcting them? How are you helping them better understand their approach to China?
I think a lot of it actually starts with transparency and information that is not available. So I'm talking to very senior people as well, and they most of them looked from Europe to the US and not to China. So basically, I'm not sure if I should call it ignorance, but it kind of is. Yeah, if you have for example, definitely for Ant Financial, if you're a bank in Europe, you should definitely look at a company that is valued at 60 billion, right? So it's doesn't make sense to look to the US too much if you have a disruptor here in China. So you should definitely look and make yourself familiar with what is already happening here and what kind of solutions are always already available. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the other day, different, not fintech related, but there was an Australian company. They are interested in entering the market, and they basically do something like Dianping. Yeah, so they have it's a cool solution, and you probably in a lot of European countries you don't have Dianping, where you can order your table and order your food and pay your food within one app. Yeah, of course that's a huge value also for the restaurants or store owners. So basically, these kind of couponing models or couponing plus XXX, what you already have around here in China, you really need to make sure to conduct a good market research.
Yeah, because if your plan is to come into China and your direct competitor is Dianping, which for everybody listening, that is the number one.
Yes, it's amazing.
It's massive. I mean, that's not, you don't want to go against the giants.
No, for sure.
And I mean, if that's your strategy, is we're going to compete with the biggest gorilla in the room. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, don't do it. Also, like infrastructure, I would advise not to go into any infrastructure. Like look at Uber. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of disrupting like mobility, right?
Well, so people say Uber kind of won in China. That's kind of a win, right? Getting eaten up by your competitor.
True. You could frame it this way. I'm not sure how
many people are like Uber to even start with, I guess. Yeah.
Exactly.
So continue. I think I've answered my own question.
So infrastructure is something I would never do because you basically compete against like the big boys. And but other industries, I would say, like a friend of mine is doing a robo advisor here in China. Oh, yeah. So I think that is that makes sense because
is that like financial robo advising?
Yes, exactly. So basically, what they do, they you as a Chinese citizen, you can like a $50,000 you can get out of the country per year. Mm-hmm. So that is legal. And then what they do is they manage these kind of funds in Germany, like with a German entity, and then distributing and diversifying these, let's say, $50,000 into the whole world with a smart algorithm. Basically, they invest in exchange tradable funds, ETFs, on behalf of their clients.
I understand, okay, there's that limit. Mm-hmm. So there's a limit on how much Chinese citizens can take out of the money and invest out of China.
Yes.
How many startups, or would you advise people to come and think of more ideas, creative ideas to help people invest their money internationally? Because there's so many Chinese, even if it's a small amount, 50,000, there's still enough people that it makes very lucrative sense, right?
I would say so, yes, definitely. I think then there are some good opportunities also to like maybe think about smarter or more innovative ways to structure this kind of investment. So maybe you can find a solution where you do not really need the RMB to be converted into another currency, so through securitization or something like this. So you have the RMB as an underlying security asset to purchase stuff outside of China. You just need to have a bank or a partner who's willing to do this trade with you. But I think there's some huge opportunity there, definitely, because Chinese traditionally are highly, highly overinvested in local real estate.
Yes. That's interesting. I mean, do we really know, is that a lack of international vision or ability, or why are people so highly overinvested in local real estate?
I talked to some friends and I think it's also like locals, and I think it's also cultural inherited, like meaning you just basically you buy a house, right? And then you know like the asset class pretty well, like it's something you can touch, and it's like...
you put your money there instead of putting it in a bank.
Yeah, exactly.
And so also there's that thing where you kind of need a house for your kids to get married.
Yeah, true. Still like taking the own house out of the equation, like they still invest too much in real estate, But you're right, exactly. It's a cultural like kind of...
Isn't this so different from... Yeah, it's like a cultural have to, like this is what you do. But that's kind of good to have, right? Isn't that very different from the debt culture?
Of course.
Of the West. I mean, America's debt culture. Oh man, we love digging holes and putting ourselves in there.
True.
And you know, these people don't even own their own house and they're in debt. And it's just...
Yes.
You know...
It's crazy, yeah. And then you have the total opposite here, yeah. Like people save, you now have like with the growing like middle class, you have a bit more spendings and a bit more the likelihood of people borrowing money to purchase luxury goods or like travel and stuff is growing a little, but.
But people are still saving.
But still, it's not even close to the US or like a European country. Well, if you look at our Western countries, they are all highly indebted.
Yeah.
So like as a person, you could never be like running over your own like personal, let's say, GDP, right? Over,
no.
Like, but the country's doing that all the time. So,
yeah.
So that is maybe also not like the best.
Let's try to get into last questions here.
Yes.
So what do you feel is the next challenge, next major challenge, or the next frontier for fintech and kind of startups coming to China right now to get into the space?
Coming into the space is challenging, I think, in terms of the regulatory environment is not as clear, let's put it this way. Even if you're very close or know all the regulations and stuff, it's still like there's open, like you can openly interpret some stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of open interpretation. We had Bobby Lee, the Bitcoin. We had him over here, and he was talking about how there's open interpretation.
Yes.
But yet that helps people sometimes.
Of course, yeah, I agree. It does help, but if you need I would advise in financial services, it's good to have local partners, for sure. Yeah, maybe not even co-founders, but... Mm-hmm. It helps to
so
be
how
very
would
close.
So we talk about this a lot actually.
Yeah.
If you were advising a company that was doing a fintech, either mobile payments or robo AI or anything, would you advise them to get a Chinese co-founder, Chinese JV, or do a Woofie?
The other day I talked to a founder, German, like his team is, but he's the only foreigner in the whole team. So
yeah.
It's he's doing something around media, so. Also highly regulated. So actually, in the end, the investor asked them to set up a VIE structure because, he cannot own shares in this in the local company. And it depends on the space, I would really say. Like, what is your business model? What are you trying to do? Can you do like some consulting or stuff? Yeah, then you probably just go with the Woofie, and then you can. I think like the legal framework is not as important, but like really getting traction and getting the numbers right and making sure that you have a solution to a problem that exists here locally.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I would always advise to have local partners.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much, Tobias, for being here, talking to us all. I learned a lot. I am a newbie still in fintech, and I really want to get into it. So thanks so much. I really appreciate your time.
Sure. Thank you.
Is there any way that our guests could, I mean, this is your chance to plug.
Yeah.
Plug what you do, who you are, and any way for our guests to get a hold of you and contact you. Best way.
Best way to contact me is through LinkedIn, for sure. So feel free to reach out, get in touch with me, and then
I'm always looking. How do you spell your last name? Because I know I struggle with this. So it's Tobias, and then Fütze.
It's a very complicated. Don't bother. Tobias is perfectly fine.
Okay. It's T-O-B-I-A-S, Tobias Fütze. P-F-U-E-T-Z-E.
Yeah. Although the U with the like two dots on top.
Oh,
the German one.
The German U. Thank you so much for being on the cast. I really appreciate it. Thank you to David, our sound editor. Thank you to Vivian, our producer. Thank you to Todd, who is not here right now, but we wish he was. And thank you to you guys, the listeners. We really appreciate it, and we're always trying to give you guys the best we can. So thanks so much, and we will see you guys again in the next episode. Hey, everyone. We want to give a shout out to our sponsors. China Accelerator is the number one accelerator in the East. They are a mentorship-driven program that takes your ideas from all over the world and helps you make them successful in China. At the same time, we take great ideas from inside China and help them grow all over the world. If you want to find out more, please visit www.chinaaccelerator.com, and batch 10 applications are going to be open soon, so it's a really good opportunity to get in there.
We also want to thank our other sponsor, PeopleSquared. PeopleSquared is the largest and best co-working space across China. They've got 8 or 9 spaces in Shanghai. They've got spaces up in Beijing. They've got spaces down in Shenzhen. They really are the best community of people to be dealing with here. So if you have a startup and you're coming to China, PeopleSquared is your number one choice.
And we'd also like to thank our syndication partner, Technode. They are the number one source for news and information about the startup ecosystem, what's going on inside of China. They also work with TechCrunch and helped publish and syndicate that. So we're really happy to have them on as a syndication partner. You can find out more at technode.com.